Test one, test two. Is it too quiet? Is it too quiet? Is it too loud? Perfect porridge. Perfect baby bear porridge. Check one. Perfect porridge. I'm getting myself in your microphone. Perfect porridge. Dialing you down. Dialing you down. Mama Bear Mike, Daddy Bear Mike, looking for the perfect... The perfect porridge. Hello. Check one. And that's an industry term. When you get the perfect porridge, like...
I really like that.
Yeah. Like, you know, you get the obsessive sort of MCs who mix the albums together. They're always looking for that perfect porridge. Hi, this is Griffin McElroy.
Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
And this is wonderful. So this is a show about things that we're really into. And what I'm really into, I'll start off, my small wonder is that good audio, that nice clean mix, that pee-pee, as we say, sometimes when we shorten it down. How are you doing? We're doing a midday record.
I'm good, actually. I feel energized, ready to go. Had some good morning coffee ready.
I love morning coffee.
Morning coffee, yeah.
The hot bean juice when the sun comes up, you pour that down. What is your favorite Folgers commercial? I think mine is the one where it's Christmas and the woman comes up to the man in there in the kitchen and their brother and sister, and she puts the bow on him and he's like, "What's this for?" And she's like, "You being home is all I wanted for Christmas." Oh,
that's a good one.
You get all the love commercials, like the romantic love commercials when they're trying to sell a product, but that sibling camaraderie. Oh, that's good stuff. And the holidays too. Mm-hmm. That's another small wonder of mine. You got any small wonders?
You know what? I'm just going to say glasses.
Sure.
The kind you wear on your face.
Yeah, sure.
I like Griffin kind of feel like glasses are a good look on me. And, you know, I don't obviously put a lot of, I don't want to say obviously, but I don't put a lot of effort into my appearance in the morning.
Obviously, it's harsh.
Yeah,
it's
it is harsh. But when I put glasses on, I feel like, well, that's something.
Yeah, sure.
That's a look I've created.
I enjoy glasses. I do think around, once I hit like 40, I might switch.
Really?
Switch to contacts, yeah.
You've got kind of a baby face.
I have kind of a baby face, and I'm getting this sort of salt and pepper thing going on
you
in
are.
The sides of my hair that I kind of like no glasses, just those baby blues and the silvery.
I will say your eyes stand out a lot more when you're not wearing glasses.
I know.
I feel like a lot of people don't appreciate your eyes.
Silver that,
and it's because you've hidden them with the glasses.
And it doesn't help that the glasses are almost certainly covered in sort of rice cakes residue.
You always got a film of baby.
Whatever the baby has touched recently is, yeah. This Yeti. I got a Yeti tumbler from the REI. It is giving me life.
Griffin has been on the quest for the perfect travel coffee mug since I've known him.
And this is it. This is it. I can say definitely. It's got a clear cap so I can look down and see exactly how much of the hot bean juice I do have left. It keeps my shit. It is 12, 16. This stuff is like...
still toasty?
It's like above lukewarm. Like it's still pleasant to drink. And we made it 5 hours ago. That's good stuff. And I've been listening to Friends at the Table again. It's a podcast, like an actual play podcast. I mean, I stopped listening to more or less all podcasts when I got very, very busy. But now that our commute to daycare is very, very long, I've been tucking back in. And they just finished their most recent season called Twilight Mirage. And it's really fucking good. I'm really into it. I'm like 18 episodes in. I've listened to all the other seasons too, but I'm just now getting caught up, and it's fantastic. If you haven't listened, it's like an actual play podcast, and it's kind of incredible how much like world building they do in each episode. Like if you introduce a character in Friends at the Table, it's like, and here's their whole history, and here's how they fit into the context of this whole world. So it's like, it's in a way like more dense than other like actual play podcasts, but I mean that in a good way, in the way that like diamonds are dense, where like everything is so rich. And so I think it like requires you to like kind of commit to the listen. But if you do, holy shit, it is like some of the most rewarding like fiction I have tucked into the past 4 years or so that I've been listening to it. I don't actually know how long I've been listening to it, but it's great. It's a great show. It's a lot of small wonders, huh?
Yeah.
You got any more?
No, that's good for me.
Who goes first this week?
I think it's you.
Sorry, I'm getting a hum, and it's like a bug in the porridge, and I don't like it, but my first thing this week is harmony. eHarmony, the dating website.
Gosh, it's this is bad on either way you land.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm talking about regular old Harmony.
You know what I was thinking yesterday?
Yeah, please.
My hope is that our son will meet your Harmony needs.
Okay.
That he will have the ability to harmonize with you, because it is not a skill that I have.
You make it sound like I am always coming up to you and being like, I'm right here. I really only do that for jokes on the podcast sometimes.
Yeah, and
it's
been
a while. It's been a while since I've done it. I guess I genuinely do like good harmony.
Oh,
Did you ever sing in like a choir or a show or anything like that where you had to sing harmonies?
That is part of the problem. My experience with singing basically stopped after I left elementary school. I became a band kid, and I was formerly in the band universe where the harmony was decided for me, and I made the sound on an instrument.
I was in the choir universe. I did choir classes all the way up to high school, and that's when I started doing more freeform instrument classes.
And you took vocal lessons, didn't you?
I took vocal lessons when I was Horton the Elephant in Seussical, because it was a very demanding role. I did for Oliver as well, actually. So yeah, a couple times I did. So like that was the other main exposure I had to choral vocal harmonies is from shows. And there's a really genuinely incredible feeling you get when you create a good harmony with somebody.
I have heard that. A lot of people I know like joined a cappella groups specifically for that rush of the harmony.
Yeah, that's why you join a group like that. It's why you join a choir. It's why a lot of people are enthusiastic about being in choir, because it genuinely feels like magic, like creating something that is that pleasant to listen to. And it is a communal sort of artistic expression. What has kind of inspired me to talk about this is we have been listening to a lot of like Disney music on Spotify lately. We have like this Disney playlist we tune into when we are hanging out with Henry, and there's unsurprisingly like a lot of really great harmony in a lot of like classic Disney songs and newer Disney songs. So like the one specifically that I've had stuck in my head is from Frozen, of all movies. I've seen that movie like twice and I enjoy it, but like there's a song in it called Love is an Open Door that just has this two-part harmony between these two characters that is like in the chorus that is so fucking good. I'll play a little bit of it now, but just like a little bit of it, because I imagine Disney is pretty litigious. Love is an open door. Love is an open door. Love is an open door with you. So like that song, and I think a lot of, like I said, my background is in theater. Like a lot of my favorite harmonies come from shows like Into the Woods. Some of my favorite actually like of all time comes from Spring Awakening. There are so many great, brilliant, like huge group harmonies in that show, and I'll probably play something from that right now. I don't know what, but here's something from Spring Awakening. It's like my favorite thing in music. And I wanted to talk about the science of harmony. Why does a C and a G sound good together?
Oh, I like that.
And this is, it's super fucking complicated. And I'm not even talking about the music theory, which I've been taking adult piano classes recently, which I don't know if I've talked about on the show before.
I don't think you have.
Because I wanted to learn how to play piano good. Like, I've been composing music for Adventure Zone for a long time, but I actually can't sit down and play that stuff back on a piano. I do it in a DAW, in a Logic, so I can like move shit around in a piano roll, but I can't actually sit down and play it live. So I wanted to do that, but I also wanted to learn some theory, and I've been doing that in this class, and it's cool. I don't want to talk about the music theory of it, because I would get that almost certainly wrong. I want to talk about the science of it, which I will definitely get wrong, because it's interesting, right? Like, why does a note, right, which moves at a certain frequency or amplitude or whatever, sound good with another specific note a certain number of intervals away? So here is I'm going to read some stuff off the Wikipedia article about harmony, which is still very, very complex. Harmony is based on consonants, right? Consonants and dissonance. When you have like a dissonant thing, it doesn't sound good. A consonant thing does. A concept whose definition has changed various times during the history of Western music. Awesome. Great. lock it down, y'all. In a psychological approach, consonance is a continuous variable. Consonants can vary across a wide range. A chord may sound consonant for various reasons. Why do we have this word if it doesn't fucking mean anything?
I feel like everything you just said doesn't make any sense to me.
Okay, so like, why does a C major triad sound good, right? C, E, G. It's like the most basic chord.
Yeah.
The first reason is because between those three notes in that triad, there is a lack of what is called perceptual roughness. So when you have two notes, like two polyphonic notes that you play at the same time, your ear tries to pick out the different notes being played simultaneously. And there are certain intervals that are harder to pick out those notes.
Okay.
I have the OP1, which I talked about. I got, I ordered and finally got in, earlier this week. So I want to play like an example, but I mean, you could play any three notes, like,
yeah,
that has a lot of perceptual roughness because that's your ear, like trying to pick those notes apart, but you can't really do it. So it doesn't sound super good. Meanwhile, like this is the, I played an extra note cause I'm holding this. That's a C major triad and it sounds good because you can pick out what those notes are. They are, you know, the 1, 3, 5. They are a pleasing number of intervals. That is my cursory read of what the science of this says. Okay. So that's the first thing. There's a lack of roughness. So the second reason that a chord sounds good is because it creates perceptual fusion, which means that the notes that make up that chord, this is a quote from Wikipedia, and I'll try to explain it, is an overall spectrum is similar to a harmonic series, which is a sequence of sounds that have where the frequency of each sound is an integer multiple of the lowest frequency being played. This is very complicated, and I'm not even sure I understand it, but basically the math of like the frequencies of the various notes, if the math is good, then it sounds good. But honestly, the biggest reason is because of familiarity. Like there are chords that have been heard throughout music, throughout time, that just like a C major chord sounds good because you've heard it a fucking billion times.
This reminds me of like the way people just like symmetry. Like people tend to like more symmetrical faces. Like there's just something kind of built into us to look for certain
patterns. Yeah, and I mean, there's mathematical reasons for that as well. So there's a lot of reasons why a chord sounds good, why a harmony sounds good. And I don't know, I just find that shit really interesting. Not only does it sound good, but like, who was the first person to sing? And then who was the second person to sing along with that first person? It was like, ooh, that sounded nice. And why did they know it sounded nice? And like, why did that become the way we listen to music and think that this harmony sounds nice while this one does not sound nice? I don't know. I find that stuff like really, really interesting. And I understand, I want to say I fucked that all up. I understand none of this, but I tried my best.
I really appreciate harmony and it blows me away the way some people just can hear a note and can harmonize with it.
Yeah.
And if that's a learned skill or if some people are just naturally better at it than others, I don't know.
I don't know either. Anyway, that's harmony. What's your first thing?
So my first thing is from a band that we both like, Darwin D's.
Darwin D's.
They had a new album come out in August called 10 Songs That Happened When You Left Me With My Stupid Heart.
That's a very, very, very Darwin D's-ass album title.
Right? We're familiar with them from their self-titled album that came out in 2010. They are an indie band from New York City. Signed to a music label, Lucky Number, and the group's front man, Darwin D's, is Darwin Merwin Smith. He grew up in Chapel Hill, attended Wesleyan, and moved to New York. Is Wesleyan in New York? I don't actually know.
Connecticut.
Okay. Darwin D's is like a super poppy, fun, like it's a fun live show because they get really into it. They do some choreography. There's a lot of good energy. But it's also like just really poppy, fun, up-tempo music. And it's a band that I heard at South by Southwest in 2011, actually the same year that I met Griffin, and then introduced Griffin to. And then it kind of became this like shared thing for us.
Yeah.
But the first song I want to bring is actually off their new album, and it's called Say It First. When you won't say it first, don't just say it. Say it back to me. I need words. Use your words. Love me actively. His lyrics tend to be very like romantically focused,
and like heartbroken, like a almost all of the songs are about a relationship that has
but also
soured.
like lyrically really fun. I was reading this review of the second album they had, and there was a criticism that said that their music explores the ambiguous, tense relationship between love and hate,
yeah.
which I feel like is a good way of speaking to that. The song that is actually they're referring to is off of Songs for Imaginative People, You Can't Be My Girl, where there's a line that says, I think I love you are horrible.
Yeah.
Pitchfork in the review of that album talked about how they have this ability to write awkward but cutesy earworms, similar to bands like Passion Pit.
I just love the guitar. There's a consistent guitar sound mm-hmm. that is like really like crunchy and filtered out that mm-hmm. I just like I'm obsessed with. And in a song like DNA off the first album that is like very stripped down, it's like just that crunchy soft guitar. It is so fucking good.
It's very good.
But
it has this kind of energy that just reminds me a lot of like, you know, like Ben Folds, like very like kind of complex lyrics, but very like peppy pop.
Yeah.
Potential. But I also wanted to play the song that I think has a lot of meaning to me and Griffin, which is Radar Detector.
Yeah.
It was one of the first songs that we kind of shared together. And there's a line that I just, I don't know, it just always makes me think of the beginning of our relationship when he says, it's only been a week, but I know that you are mine to keep.
Yeah.
Which just kind of speaks to that kind of enthusiasm early in a relationship where you're just kind of riding on this energy.
It's a very fun music video also.
Yeah, so I wanted to play a little of that too. You and I go shopping and find exactly what we're looking for. You and I go shopping and fall asleep inside a mattress store. Yeah. We cruise the neighborhood, but it's not supposed to feel this good. You are a radar detector. But yeah, I would really recommend them. They tour a lot. When I was doing research, I couldn't find a lot of interviews because it seems like they are just always touring, promoting whatever album they just recently released.
Their choreographed dances for their live shows are also very choice.
I tried to find more information about Darwin Smith, the frontman, and I found all these interviews. And the interviews are always really light. And I just found one where he talked about how he never washes his hair, and that's how he maintains his signature curls.
Okay.
But that was like all I could find. Sure. So I encourage you to check them out. They're on Spotify, iTunes, etc.
Hey, can I steal you away?
I'm not going to beat last week.
You're not. But
it's tremendous pressure to try and beat last week.
It spiraled me into like what other songs.
I know. I was thinking the same thing of like what can we pull. But then I didn't want it to be expected, you know?
It could be like, and I will always love you.
Perfect.
Look at the waveform on that one. That's no good. Look at that. That sucks. That's going to sound really bad. Anyway.
Griffin, I have some personal messages.
Should we really be reading them?
They're not between us.
A secret personal message? Did you hack someone and get their personal in Gmails?
No.
Okay.
Okay. This message is for Lily. It is from Zoe. Falling in love with you has been the greatest thing I've ever done. Know that no matter what, I'll always choose you. You're my other half, my favorite person, my inspiration, my best friend, my rock, and my soulmate. Enjoy this message from your favorite podcasters. You deserve it. You are wonderful. Let's keep getting better together. I love you.
And who is that from again?
It's from Zoe.
That's the Zoe that did the big motorcycle flip over the gorge. I think. So, like, I'm sure your love is great. The best thing you've ever done, you did the big flip over the big pit. And you did two flips, actually, in the air and landed it perfectly. And you saved all the kids from the bus.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm just saying, they said, our love's the best thing I've ever done. And it's like, you did the big flip over the pit and you saved all the kids from the bus.
Oh, it's that Zoe.
Yeah.
That did the big flip.
Uh-huh. Over.
Yeah, over the pit.
And
save the kids
from
the bus.
So, like, the love is good, but let's just not jump to conclusions.
Lily is a lucky person.
Yeah, I guess so.
To be with the person who did the flip. Over the pit.
With the bus.
The bus. This message is for Lisa and Michael, and it is from Stephanie. Although we don't spend nearly enough time together, I wanted you both to know how much your friendship has meant to me. I don't have many strong men in my life, but both of you are hilarious, authentic, and kind. Let the world know the awesome power of these two very good lads. Let's get Chinatown ramen soon and cry to Sufjan Stevens.
My favorite activity. You throw on Carrie and Lowell. You get your big bowl of ramen. Your tears are going to fall in there at a certain umami flavor. And really, those Sufjan tears are just the most umami of all. I can't get enough of it.
Hello, are you looking for a new comedy podcast? In which case, can I draw your attention to the Beef and Dairy Network podcast? It's a fictional industry podcast for the beef and dairy industries. It won Best Comedy at the 2017 British Podcast Awards, and it features wonderful guests such as Greg Davis.
To my knowledge, it's the only cow circus that's ever existed in this country. In rural Russia, every small town has a cow circus.
Josie Long.
You should have a beef. Have a beef with them. I have a beef with you. I will have a beef with you. Come round my house, and I'll have a beef with you.
And Andy Daly.
That virus never existed. There was never any such thing as a mad cow disease. That was all an illusion that Big Lamb came up with.
That's the Beef and Dairy Network podcast. Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts from. And I would recommend starting at episode one. Bye.
Would you like to know my second thing?
Yes.
Pop-Tarts!
What was that?
I was telling you about Pop-Tarts. I mean, how excited I am about them.
It sounded like somebody just drove by our house selling Pop-Tarts.
Oh, God, I wish.
Like the ice cream vendor, but with Pop-Tarts.
And they could have like a little toaster gun, and so I could just like open up the window, and they'd be like, Pop-Tarts. And I'd be like, yeah. And they would just pop them right in. I love Pop-Tarts. I know we talk about breakfast food a lot, but I'm always excited to eat a Pop-Tart. We never had Pop-Tarts at the house I grew up in. And so Pop-Tarts were and continue to be an exotic little pastry.
I feel the same way.
They are so good. I may have had one this morning in a box I found in the back of our pantry that I don't know how long it's been there.
I was going to say, I didn't know we had Pop-Tarts.
It had art on it for Destiny 2. And I bought, this game came out last September. And I remember I did get some because they had like a code for some shit on it. That means this came from our last house. They're a year old. Anyway, they're still really good. And I got sort of sugar high that I'm still riding on. And here's a confession. I am so excited to eat Pop-Tarts when I see them. A lot of the times, I do not even toast them.
I don't know that I've ever had a toasted Pop-Tart.
You're kidding me.
I just always eat them right out the box.
They're still good. They're better when they're toasted. Everything in there softens up in a way that is really delightful. Hmm. What's your fave flave? Let's go to the flavor corner.
I mean, every day, if I had to eat a Pop-Tart, I would eat a brown sugar cinnamon.
Same.
But I do like
that
the
sounded
little...
like I said shame. It was me saying same, but I lisped it for some reason.
I also, but if I'm looking for like a fun out of the box treat, I like the little strawberry with the sprinkles.
Yes,
I'm glad we're on the same page on this.
Yes, of course we are.
But I don't know that I would ever choose it as a breakfast option. I actually like it as a dessert or a snack.
Yeah, before sort of the rise of Clif bars and I guess Nature Valley granola bars, but those were pretty busted for, I feel like, a long time. I don't like a crunchy granola. Anyway, this would be like my go-to like road trip. Like I need something to chew on in the car to like fill my belly up for the next hour. It would be Pop-Tarts. I love them. Here's some history about Pop-Tarts. And stop me if this sounds familiar. This is a Kellogg's product. But in the 60s, post figured out how to package stuff in foil so that it would not spoil as quickly. They actually started doing this with dog food, but then they introduced toaster-prepared breakfast pastries that would sort of go along with their cereal offerings. And they sort of announced it in the early 60s, but it wasn't until 1963 that they took this product to market. They called their product Country Squares.
What is country about them?
No, but that's a really not the
what
most.
What the flavors used to be? Do you have that information?
I do not have it because very shortly before they even put them in the marketplace, they announced them. They're like, check this out. These are called Country Squares and they're going to taste like grass. And fucking Kellogg saw this and they're like, oh, well, we'll just make those too.
Oh, is this like Oreo and Hydrox?
Just like Oreo and Hydrox. So 6 months later, Kellogg figured out how to do their own version, and they started advertising it with an animated anthropomorphic toaster named Milton, just crushing it. And they were selling these Pop-Tarts so fast that they could not keep up with demand. Sorry, Post. You slept on it, Post, didn't you?
Can we see that? Do you have a little toaster guy? Because that could be our wonderful t-shirt.
I mean, Kellogg's might have something to say about that. I'll look at him. I'll look at him.
He's Can I see him?
Yeah, he's like a little clown. He's got big, bold eyebrows.
Nice.
He's
little rosy cheeks.
His little like plunger on the toaster is red. And he's got rosy cheeks. He's
love
cute.
It.
So they sort of ate Post's, well, Pop-Tart. They couldn't keep up with demand. And that's wild to me that they couldn't keep up with demand because when they first launched Pop-Tarts, they were not frosted. Can you imagine?
People are always looking for breakfast on the go options.
I guess so. But
like nobody has time to sit down at a table and eat a full breakfast anymore. They want something like they can take on the road.
Sure, sure. And I mean, it's the 60s, the rat race. I get it. But no frosting, Kellogg's? They didn't put frosting on it until 1964. And simply because like they didn't know that frosting would survive the toasting process.
Yeah, makes sense.
But then I guess they solved that with science. And the first frosted Pop-Tarts were released in 67. They had four flavors: strawberry, blueberry, brown sugar, cinnamon, and apple currant. And now there's like, you know, hot fudge sundae, s'mores, peanut butter. There's a ton of different flavor options. So they crushed it. Pop-Tarts are great. They figured it out. It was awesome. They weren't satisfied with just that. And this kicked off a generation of experimentation that was just disastrous for these little pastries. I would like to take you through the museum of Pop-Tart failure. So in the mid-90s, they introduced pastry swirls, which were basically toaster strudels, which please, toaster strudels have a place in our society. And I have eaten them maybe six times and don't regret it, but like do not say... They would have the commercials where the kid would open up the... A lot of commercial talk in this one, but the kid would open up the locker and all the Pop-Tarts would fall out and be like... Fuck you, dude. Eat those Pop-Tarts. They're still Pop-Tarts. Do you know what I mean? Like, you would open up a backpack and like a million Pop-Tarts would come out and be like, I wouldn't eat that trash with my worst enemy's mouth.
So the toaster strudel was supposed to be a more refined, superior product?
Right. Okay. And that's a joke to
me. No, they're two different things.
They're two different things. But anyway, Kellogg did dip into this market. I think Pillsbury started making toaster strudels in like the mid-80s. So these were big, thick Pop-Tarts. They had less icing. They came in flavors like cherry cheese Danish, cinnamon cream. They did not do very well. They were discontinued in 2001. They introduced snack sticks in 2002, which I kind of remember, which were these like break apart Pop-Tarts that were like supposed to be an after school snack for kids. They promoted this on American Idol with like this huge ad buy. Nobody bought them. They were discontinued.
So they
were later.
Just like perforated Pop-Tarts.
Exactly. Okay. They were Pop-Tart Kit Kats, which like Pop-Tarts aren't hard to break apart.
No.
2005, they made ice cream shop flavors, which had like ice cream flavors and 25% less sugar. Those were discontinued in 2012. So you got a good 7 years of those. 2006, they made Go-Tarts, which were thicker, narrow, and wrapped individually instead of packages of two, which were discontinued in 2008. That's the whole fucking point, guys, is I want two of them.
Well, and they are so certain that people want a smaller Pop-Tart.
It's wild to
me. Maybe this was back when the iPod kept getting smaller
and smaller. That's what it was.
And they were like, America wants smaller. Let's make Pop-Tarts, but littler.
Nobody's ever picked up a Pop-Tart and been like, how am I even fucking supposed to hold this?
Oh, it's so heavy.
It's so
I
heavy.
I want to be able to fit it in my front pocket.
2007, they made Pop-Tart Splits with a Z, which were two separate flavors combined in one pastry. So like chocolate and vanilla, strawberry, blueberry. I remember this. This was okay. This made it to 2012. So five years of those. And then in 2011, there were Pop-Tarts Mini Crisps, which were, get this, tiny, bite-sized versions of Pop-Tarts with no fruit filling, only flavored pastry with frosting. They are currently discontinued.
What?
Why, y'all? This is what I'm saying. Y'all got it in one, by which I mean stole it definitely from Post, and then you were like, all right, I've got it. Smaller. And one of them, and no fruit fill. What the fuck are
Did
you-
they release something called Fills, which was just the filling? The filling.
You scraped it out of a bag. Anyway, they're great. Oh, also there was the whole thing about, there was a guy who caught fire to Pop-Tarts with his toaster because he left it in for too long. There was, in 1994, a Texas A&M professor did an experiment where he put a strawberry Pop-Tart in the toaster and just like saw what happened, and it produced flames over a foot high.
Oh my gosh.
So these don't have very much nutritional value. Apparently they are essentially starter logs, but
you know what? They're also dairy free.
Oh, interesting.
At least the brown sugar cinnamon ones are.
Because that makes sense.
Back when I was avoiding dairy, yeah. It was exciting to have a dessert treat that I could get.
That's probably what, like a short crust with like, and the frosting probably has no, yeah.
It's just weird that there's no butter involved.
Yeah. I mean, we have ways of figuring that out. Anyway, Pop-Tarts, you're good. What's your second thing?
My second thing. So you remember when I did Curiosity?
Sure. The Mars rover. I love that guy.
Well, it's also a personality trait is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Charisma.
Interesting.
Now, okay, you're going to say everybody likes charisma.
Carpenter from Buffy and Angel. Yeah, she did a great job in those shows. Mm-hmm. And yeah, proud of her.
But I did a little investigating because charisma is one of those things that I find really exciting as like an introvert. Because when somebody brings charisma to the table, it like does some of the work for me.
What's interesting is like when I think about the people that you and I talk about, like, only kind of friends who we've met like only just a few times that are very memorable, it's mm-hmm. because they're extremely charismatic.
Exactly.
And that is so exciting.
So I found a quiz online that I would like you to take to determine whether or not you're an especially charismatic person.
Okay.
Can I do need a calculator.
Okay. I need a calculator for this?
Yeah, if you can pull it up on your computer.
Okay.
So this is the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology.
Okay.
Developed 6 prompts that can reveal how charismatic you are. Rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 5 on each behavior.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. I love that you think I need a calculator to add 6 numbers.
Well, because you have to divide it after you're done.
Oh, God. Okay.
So, okay. Question 1. I am someone who, 1, has presence in a room.
And this is a 5 is good?
Yes.
Okay. Has presence.
Give yourself a score.
Okay.
2, has the ability to influence people.
Okay.
3, knows how to lead a group.
Oh, yeah.
4, makes people feel comfortable.
Okay.
5, smiles at people often.
How would you think, what score would you give me on that? I literally have no way of telling.
I gave myself a low score on that one.
What about me?
I would also kind of give you a low score. Okay. I think you and I, we have a resting face of concern.
Yes. I've not given myself a 1 yet, which is maybe I'm being very generous.
Okay.
Last question.
6, can get along with anyone.
I actually think I'm pretty good at that.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right.
So divide your total score by 6 to get your average charisma score. What's your number?
3.3 repeating.
Okay. If it's higher than 3.7, the researchers say you're more charismatic than the average person.
Am I less charismatic than the average person? That's what that means, right?
Well, I don't know what the average person is.
I mean,
we're probably within average. I took it and gave myself a 3.2.
Okay.
So we're probably average charisma.
Yeah, I don't have less. I guess. Yeah. It's wow, that's a real shot to the gut. I'll be honest.
Well, I mean,
Did
you think you were?
Yeah.
Hugely.
Yeah.
See, I give myself low scores in presence in a room.
Yes.
I don't think I have especially a lot of presence.
I'm talking about myself. I think you're beautiful and radiant.
and then smiles at people often.
No, thanks. Do not. Do not.
I actually think it's a little unfair that the smile one is on there.
Yeah. Controlling a group, though, like, is that what it says? Control the group? Probably not. Because that's
lead a group.
Okay. Yeah. Lead, control. I mean, fear is more powerful than love.
I think most people know what charisma is, but just so that you know the official definition, it's compelling attractiveness or charm that can inspire devotion in others.
Yeah.
And is often viewed as a divinely conferred power or talent.
Interesting. Wait, what? Say that. Get one more again.
Divinely conferred power or talent. So it's like a natural gift.
Right.
Like charisma is something that people have, and it seems like not a skill, but something that they just have.
I think it's the divinely in there that caught me off guard. Like,
well, like a God-given talent.
Okay, yeah.
You know? So I thought this was interesting, and it makes sense. So the Harvard Business Review came up with these, quote, charismatic leadership tactics, which does not surprise me. And it's like a list of a dozen key tactics to develop charisma within yourself.
Specifically for business purposes?
Most likely, yeah.
This is going to give me douche chill frostbite.
It's going to give you the most douche chills. Some of them are not particularly upsetting, like expressions of moral conviction, the setting of high goals, facial expressions, but some of them like stories and anecdotes. Like,
all right.
Become a person with anecdotes.
Yeah. That, oh boy, but that one can really break bad, don't you think, when the anecdotes aren't so hot?
I know. That's There's a risk. So many ways.
And that seems pretty whack to be like, you know how to be more charismatic? Be better at telling stories and anecdotes.
I have an anecdote. This is how my toe became infected.
Yeah. Made a real tasty loaf of pumpernickel yesterday. Does anybody want to hear about my pumpernickel bread?
I have a fun anecdote about how my ear was cut off. Do you want to hear it?
I had a fun dream last night about Alanis Morissette. Anyone? Any takers? No. Interesting. Shoot. Completely platonic dream about Alanis Morissette.
This is my anecdote about finding out that I drank expired milk 7 days in a row.
Ah, shoot. Is this a real one, Rach? Because this is actually the kind of thing that I would not. This is what I come to you for.
No.
Okay.
Charisma is something, I mentioned it's exciting to me as an introvert because, at first I thought what I like is people that are extroverts, but that's not true. I don't like somebody that's just outgoing to be outgoing, you know?
Can you be a charismatic introvert?
I think so. I think that's what we are.
Yeah. I mean, I just found out I'm below average in the charisma department, and I'm still kind of reeling
from that. It's not
that
you're below average. You're probably average.
Okay.
Which I think is probably to you is also upsetting. But as an introverted person, if I talk to somebody who has charisma, and it's not like they're super like, hi, I'm so excited to meet you. Isn't the weather funny? But they're just like, you know, just charming. Instantly, it like relaxes me and makes, you know, me be a more charismatic person.
Yeah, anything that takes the weight of social interaction sort of off my back. I totally get what you're saying.
They're excellent hosts at a party. You know, they're just excellent at if you find yourself in a situation where you're just talking to somebody next to you and they happen to be charismatic, it's like the best.
I don't know how you guarantee authenticity in that department, though, because nothing stinks more than people who, like, if I get a whiff of you're faking it, like,
yeah, the, yeah. Well, yeah, of course.
But
I don't think that's true charisma.
Yeah.
So here's something else interesting. So I was thinking, like, who are some notable charismatic people that I can provide as examples? Do any come to mind, by the way, before I start?
I mean, this is tough because I feel like most celebrities, like,
well, and that's what I did. So I did a search and I found this list, which I think was like created by some random user.
Yeah.
But if you go to IMDb, there's a list of the 101 most charismatic celebrities.
Yeah.
And I think it's just created by a user.
I mean, the obvious ones are like Clooney is probably top 10, yes.
I had thought that, but no, he's not top 10.
And I'm not saying I agree with that, but it seems like just the most obvious, like,
yeah,
choice. I don't know, then.
Number one is Marlon Brando.
Is y'all, I don't know.
Number two is just The Beatles, which led me to question the validity of this list.
Number three is chess superstar Garry Kasparov. Huh.
Three is Elvis Presley. Four is Audrey Hepburn. Five is Michael Jackson. Six is Paul Newman. And number seven is Bob Dylan, which about Bob Dylan. Not charismatic.
Not fucking charismatic.
Yeah, so this list is not great.
Famously prickly, I would say.
Number 12 is Oprah Winfrey. Now, I think that's fair. I think
maybe
Oprah
a little
Winfrey.
Low. Number 15 is my dad, Charles. What? Okay.
But yeah, I was trying to think about charismatic, like people to what we said earlier, have presence, the ability to influence, know how to lead a group, make people feel comfortable. I mean, that's definitely Oprah, right?
Sure.
Smile at people, get along with anyone. Yeah. Everybody loves Oprah. I think Oprah is a good example.
Yeah, I would point to that in the dictionary under Oprah. I also think charisma is my favorite stat to like max out in a role playing game.
Oh yeah,
like D&D or like Fallout is really great because like you never have to shoot a gun in Fallout if you just like talk to people and you're like, hey, calm down, hey, chill out, hey, it's all right. Hey, can I tell you what our friends are really into these days?
Yes,
I've made it so small. It's like size 4 font. I don't know why I did this. Lizzie says, my wonderful thing is the song Hands Down by Dashboard Confessional. It so wonderfully sums up the excitement and joy that comes with the optimism of a new relationship. And I feel like a giant dork in the very best way because of how happy it makes me. You know this song?
No.
My hopes are so high that your kiss might kill me. So won't you kill me? You don't know that one? So I die happy. My heart is yours to fill or burst.
I don't know.
To break or bury.
No.
Whatever you prefer.
I don't know this song. Sorry, but it sounds lovely.
Yeah, it's like a backbone emo music like of the early.
I kind of miss
mid-aughts.
The emo movement.
I guess so. Rosemary says, "Hello, my wonderful thing is putting paper through a shredding machine. It is so satisfying. I find it therapeutic.
Oh, that's nice,
especially when it's the documents that you don't want the feds to get their hands on, and you know the kind of documents I'm talking about. You know, can't let them see." About my offshore drilling. Anyway, Jordan also says, I normally hate cleaning the house, but I look forward to sweeping the floor. There's something satisfying about sweeping together a little pile of dirt and grass and pet hair that shows you, hey, this really needed to be done and you did it. Great job.
Can I tell you a story?
Sure.
About sweeping.
I loved a good sweeping story. And you said you were only like average charisma. You have the best stories in anecdotes.
My sweeping story?
Yes.
Back when I worked at Sally Beauty Supply in college.
Sure.
I was getting to a point with my manager that was becoming kind of antagonistic, largely because I think she could tell very clearly I did not care about my job at Sally Beauty Supply. So one day she called me in. I was in to pick up my paycheck, I believe. And she showed me a pile of swept up leavings. And I had closed the night before. And she was like, look at this pile. I'm going to have to write you up. Very clearly, when I came in, you did not sweep. This pile was large, which looking back now indicate that I was not the only one that was not sweeping.
Yeah.
For a pile that large.
But you got caught holding the bag.
So she decided to write me up for not sweeping. And yeah, looking back now, I'm thinking, if you had a pile that large, one just me that wasn't sweeping. But this was after I had already said that I was going to quit later that month. And so she was probably just angry at me. But anyway, so now I have like sweeping scars from that experience. I mean, I still enjoy sweeping, but it has been tainted for me.
Yeah. No, I feel you.
How was that as an anecdote?
That was really good, actually. I was gripped the whole time. I want to thank Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. We are very grateful. I still think it's like the best theme song.
It's so great. It just gets everybody so hyped.
It's so good. And thanks to Max Fun for having us on the network. You can go to MaximumFun.org. Check out all the great shows there. Shows like the Beef and Dairy Network and
Switchblade Sisters.
Switchblade Sisters. And shows like Minority Corner and so many more on MaximumFun.org. Thank you all for like waiting on this episode. Sorry we've been late like a couple weeks in a row. It's been a very hectic like past month or so, but we're trying to get the ship back on the tracks. Get that ship off that tracks. That's not how that goes. Is that it?
I think that's it.
Yeah, so thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week.
Do you want to play some harmonies?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, we could also just...
Oh, wait, you want to try and harmonize again?
Yeah, why don't you sing a note and I'll harmonize with it. And then that way it'll take sort of the... So say like goodbye, but like hold like goodbye, like something like that.
Okay. Farewell.
Farewell.
You're gonna make it through to Vegas. Here's your ticket. Come on.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Hello, listeners of Maximum Fun. I want to tell you about our newest podcast that tells you all about the truth of the flat Earth.
Have you been looking out over the horizon and you've been thinking, wait a minute, this doesn't look round. I've been lied to my whole life.
What is NASA doing with $52 million
a day? Come on. We explode the myths.
Just kidding. We're Ono, Ross, and Carrie, and we investigate extraordinary claims.
That's right. We investigate extraordinary claims firsthand. We go undercover in fringe groups. We get alternative medicine treatments. And we hang out with people who have unusual beliefs, like flat earthers, 9/11 truthers.
We do ghost investigations. We've joined Scientology, and we got baptized in the Mormon church.
If it goes bump in the night, then so do we. Why don't you check out Ono, Ross, and Carrie at MaximumFun.org?